Hello, everybody. It's Steph.
And Christina.
Welcome to the airplane cast as we do our walk. This is a podcast part two, the supplementary podcast redux on Bob's dreams. This is related to podcast 715, which is the zombie dreams, which I had did a podcast on, I think, 2 days ago at lunch. And this gentleman has given more information, so Christina we're going for a walk, so that's good. I did this podcast on the drive home, but this notebook the listener kindly donated, I set to maximum battery performance, which turned off the video acceleration and messed up the video recording. Anyway, what do you care, right? But anyway, so you get two brains for the price of one, and two brains for the price of none, actually, for a good number of listeners. But this is what he wrote, and then you can let me know. Do you mind holding that up a little? You can let me know what you think. Hi, Steph and Christina. See, that's interesting, because I'm first, but I'm fewer syllables.
BCF, big jetty forehead?
That's even fewer. So, hi, Steph and Christina. It's Bob, Zombie Dream Guy. Before I start, I wanted to tell you why I'm sending this here rather than posting it on the board. Not because I need validation, but so you can see where my head is at. Also, the dreams will be more enhanced with this information. I don't want unintended people to see it, whether unknown lurkers or people at my job. Since I have a new job, I don't know who could be Googling me. It sounds dumb, I know, but there it is, and that's important, because if people get fired for what they post on the board, it's harder for them to donate. So yeah. I absolutely am going to respect that. Also, I feel such shame about the following information that I'm only comfortable sharing it with people I trust, which is the main reason by far. Just to avoid confusion, the following is all about the same person, who is the person from dream number 3 about stabbing, and he had a dream that somebody was stabbing him in the chest and stabbing him in the back. And when he said, stop doing it, or why are you doing this, the guy said, well, you hurt me, so I'm hurting you back, or something like that. It was a dream sort of at those.
Okay.
So, he says here, my first quote relationship, though I'd hesitate to call it that now, of any length, was a homosexual one with a guy I went to high school with. He was 2.5 years older than me and drove me home from school, band practice, etc. I wasn't then, and am not now, attracted to men, but somehow ended up in that situation. Since then, I have not had a homosexual relationship and do not intend on ever doing so.
I'm sorry, can you tell me again how old he was at the time?
He doesn't say.
He doesn't say.
But he gets into it a little bit in the next paragraph.
Okay.
But, so he's 15 or 16 when this starts. Since then, I have not had a homosexual relationship and do not intend on ever doing so. He showed interest in me early in our friendship, but I expressed my disinterest and left it at that. He kissed me once. I pulled back and said I wasn't interested. My first sexual experience with another person in my life was rape at the age of 15 or 16. I really can't remember. Not in the traditional knife-to-throat way that is normally imagined, but rather in my sleep. However, since it was non-consensual, I consider it rape, which I think is...
Absolutely.
I mean, no question, right?
Absolutely.
I woke up, quote, in the middle of it, shocked and horrified, more with the violation than the sex. He said he didn't know I was asleep. I didn't believe him. It happened multiple times after that, with varying excuses such as, I thought you were into it, or you keep giving me signals, and similar disgusting things. So I ended up in a, quote, relationship with him, not because I loved him, though I said I did, but because, much like a Stockholm Syndrome victim, I felt that he was it for me. And I'm not sure what it refers to here, that he's the only person who would ever show him interest, or... Anyway, we'll keep going and get back to that. Many of my friends had abandoned me due to a variety of factors, including him chasing off some, possible female interests included, and I felt that I had no one to go to. Some would yell fag at me in the lunchroom while I sat and ate with him. It didn't help that he held it over my head that at any moment he could, quote, ruin me by telling everyone I had slept with a guy. Some of these friends, by the way, were the zombies in dream number 1. I didn't feel comfortable telling my parents, though I'm fairly sure that they were aware something was going on between him and I. We were inseparable. He would sleep over a lot, and we slept in the same bed with the door locked. We talked on the phone a lot. He's the only person I ever mentioned, etc. They didn't know about the circumstances, however. A handful knew about the relationship, but as I mentioned, only 2 know the real circumstances and events.
I've seen those two are him and this other guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and someone else he mentions later.
Okay.
The quote relationship went on and off for a little over 4 years. The only physical abuse was sexual, which I thought was surprising. But there was a lot of emotional abuse, of course. Right? The constant threats of outing that I mentioned above, using my mental state and self-mutilation against me, constant fluctuations of giving and withdrawing affection, hurtful names, reality destruction, you're the best person I've ever known, and then you've hurt me more than anyone I've ever known.
Right.
Classic splitting, right?
Right.
As well as other things. He also turned some of my friends against me by outing me and then blaming me in front of them for not being open and honest with my friends and telling them about all the, quote, horrible things I did to him. I won't say that I was perfect. I engaged in lying and deception, mostly involving in-between relationships, throughout the relationship to avoid the constant fluctuations of rage and scorn. I met a girl my senior year of high school. She was a freshman in college, but had attended my high school. And we began to casually date. At this point, I was no longer with him, but we were friends. Quote, he found out that I was interested in her. Soon after he found this out, he outed me to her. She was surprised, but the fact that I had been with him didn't bother her. It would be later that she learned about everything else, which obviously did bother her. A situation, some kind of argument, happened between them, and I took her side, which enraged him. This rage lasted for approximately a year. He blasted me for choosing a, quote, stupid slut over him and having the balls to betray him by being with a liar that had hurt him. I got fed up and basically told him to fuck off, that I never wanted to hear from him or see him again. I got the occasional phone call, but it stopped completely when I was about a sophomore in college. I was with the above-mentioned girl for over 4 years until last fall. She's the only person who knows as much as you do now, and she has been a great value to my life over the years. We still keep in contact, and she's one of the only friends that I have in the world. Just let this go by. I know this may come up as a question, since sexual abuse tends to reproduce itself virally, but I was not sexually abused or humiliated as a child, and have not been abused in that way by anyone else in my life. I hope this wasn't too long and disjointed, as I wrote it all in one sitting without editing. I wanted to get my thoughts down while they were all relatively in order. I'd appreciate it if you kept this confidential. I'd also appreciate it if you'd let me know if you'd like to use it for material, for the same reason I mentioned earlier in this message and on the board, and I said I would double-check with him before posting.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I can't thank you enough for all that you both have done for me and for the world. I hope to donate someday when I actually have the money to do so. Sorry about that, by the way. I'll be happy to answer any follow-up emails or questions you may have about what I've written, as I assume there will be some. And that's the end of the letter.
Mm-hmm.
Did you...
Well...
I'm going to move it to you.
It sounds like it was just a torturous situation to be forced into a relationship and to not want it, but then to end up, you know, that sort of Stockholm syndrome where you feel...
On the threat of being outed.
Yeah,
huh?
On the threat of being outed, and it's just you were being tortured for sure by this horrible, horrible human being.
Oh, a complete sociopath.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I guess I think the question for this for Bob here is, you know, I wasn't sexually abused in my family.
He said, I think at all. Said that he could not, just wait till these people go by.
Yeah.
I think he said that he did not have any memory of this at all. Yeah. As a child, anyone else in my life. So this is apparently like a sort of one-time incident, he says, though of course there's more to it than that.
Yeah, and I would say that there absolutely is more to it than that. I would say that I would look at family history. It's an interesting thing to do a family tree and take a look at multiple generations and extended family members and take a look and see what's happening. Take a look and see what's happening in your extended family and your your historical family, grandparents, aunts, uncles, if you can go back to great-grandparents or if you have any information about that, and take a look and see if there's any kind of dysfunctional behavior or abuse or, you know, are there a lot of secrets that people don't talk about? Is there an aunt or an uncle that is never mentioned or a cousin that was sent away or, you know, I mean, there's...
A sister who was actually a mother, all this kind of stuff.
A sister who was actually a mother. You know, it's interesting because I think you mentioned, if I'm not mistaken, if I heard this letter correctly, you mentioned that when you were younger, during there was someone who would take you home from band practice.
This guy.
Was it the same guy?
Same
I wasn't
guy.
Sure
oh,
if it was
yeah.
the same,
same
guy. It was the same guy, and you said you weren't interested. And, you know, what made you susceptible or vulnerable to that kind of prey? And where were your parents? And why couldn't you go to them?
Right.
What was going on that this guy picked up that kind of level of vulnerability within you so that he could then later on take advantage of that and take advantage of you, not just take advantage of you, but clearly abuse you.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that there's the answer lies, if not within your immediate family, then within your extended family, because all of this is related. You know, your family, your parents take on the unexpressed rage, fear, sexual frustration.
Professional frustration.
All of it from their family, and they may think they're doing a good job of being functional and being loving, and but whatever they have not resolved, they then put upon you. They then put upon their children through their own unmet needs. They put that through onto their children. So this is why I'm saying take a look at the extended family. Find out what's going on there. You may find some clues as to what was going on in your own family of origin that was being denied, that wasn't being addressed, because you were being neglected.
Yes.
You know, you were being neglected by your own family in this regard, that they didn't know that this was happening, that they didn't step in, that they didn't come to talk to you. That's an important clue there. That right there in itself.
I mean I think that's exactly right. There's sort of two things that I'll mention about this, and feel free to enjoy the fact that I didn't get this earlier, so that you actually have a reasonably short video or podcast here. But to me, could I imagine that this guy was basically jumped at night when he was asleep?
Yeah.
Now I assume that as a 15-year-old kid. And to me, this is a child. I mean, there's obviously developmental, not just physical, but developmental handicaps here. Not physical handicaps, but...
Emotional.
Emotional handicaps.
Cognitive.
15-year-old is young to begin with, but a 15-year-old who's in these kinds of situations
yes.
is even below his years, not in terms of intelligence or anything,
yeah.
but
EQ
and all that is going to be different.
So
here we have a... sleepover situation
mm-hmm.
where your 15-year-old is having a sleepover with somebody who's damn close to 18.
Yep.
Now, I'm not Joe Paranoid when it comes to this kind of stuff, but I wouldn't allow that.
No, I wouldn't either. Oh, we are on the same page.
I would never in a million years allow an older... somebody who is, to all intents and purposes, a man. There's a big difference between 18 and 15. 15 and a half or whatever. And I would never in a million years let a man have a closed door sleepover
locked.
With my son. Locked. Well, we don't know if it was locked. I assume it's locked. When, first of all,
locked.
No, later, though,
oh,
when
later.
They had sleepovers later. I don't know. But if the door does lock, then you can be sure that this predator locked it before raping this poor
yes.
guy, this poor child, in his bed.
Yes.
Now... this is sort of another question, which is, locked doors? Locked doors on bedrooms? That doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
There's no need for locked doors in any place other than the bathroom. And even the bathroom, and you and I never lock our doors, but if there's kids or whatever, right? There's no need for locked doors in a house, because the room is sacrosanct. There you knock always before coming in, and if somebody says don't come in, you don't go in. There's the lock is the respect for the privacy of the person.
Yes.
Right. So a locked door, I just in a house, it just seems kind of strange to me. Did you notice something?
Funny.
Yeah, it just I don't really get the whole locked door thing.
No, I agree with you. There has been some mention in psychological literature that, you know, if you have children who are in the habit of sort of walking in the middle of the night, not in the middle of the night, but, you know, in the early evening when you and your husband are trying to get some alone time, that you put a lock on your door to prevent sort of barge-ins from, you
know, if they're three or four years old.
But not, I agree with you completely. This is something that parents need to teach children, and parents teach children through modeling it themselves. Respect
right.
of privacy, respect of property, respect of self, respect of the person. You knock before you enter a room, and you wait for someone to say it's okay to come in.
Right, right.
Why is that okay when we're going to our neighbor's house, but not okay?
When we're dealing with our own family.
Right.
And this is sort of another aspect. I totally and completely and utterly understand how this came about for this gentleman. He had no connection with his parents.
No.
That's clear.
Absolutely.
That's clear. And that lack of connection is essential for the marinating of this fresh meat for this predator. Right? They smell a lack of connection. They
Absolutely.
Smell that you're not going to be able to tell anyone what happened.
Absolutely. This is the vulnerability that I was talking about. What was it about him that made him such an obvious prey?
And it was the lack of connection with anyone.
Yes.
With his parents, so that he could be easy. Like, he was already separated from the herd in the way that every predator tries to bring down a gazelle. Right? They always look for the ones that are separated from the herd, that are malnourished,
mm-hmm.
that are easy prey. And this,
right.
of course, is what happened to this guy. So I totally understand it now. He certainly is wretchedly torturing himself. We'll get to that a little bit later, because I have some thoughts on that, and I'm sure you do as well.
Well, I didn't, but now maybe I do.
Well, I mean, certainly, well, we'll come back to that. When you have been severely neglected, and there is great severity and great rage and great hostility in neglecting a child. And if you have been neglected in your life, what happens is you treat anyone who pays any attention to you, you treat them like a dying man in a desert, dying of thirst, treats a bottle that falls from the sky, a bottle of water.
Oh, absolutely. This is what fusion is born of, the fusion that we were talking about in the Sunday show.
Yeah.
You know, this desperation, this desperate need to connect.
So if you're dying of thirst in a desert and a bottle of water drops from the sky, you don't sort of taste it a little bit and say, gee, you know, I don't know if this is the best water. I think I'm just going to wait for another bottle of water to drop from the sky, and I'm going to keep marching on in this 140-degree weather, and
right.
so on. You grab it, you open it, and you drink it without even tasting it, because you're dying of thirst.
Yes.
And this is what happens when you are crushingly lonely and neglected as a child,
mm-hmm.
and somebody begins to pay attention to you. And as I mentioned to you, the only time that I ended up in a sexually compromising position before I was married was... just kidding. Just seeing if you're listening.
I am. It took me a minute to register that before I was married. Like, what are you talking about?
Was when I was 12, I was a swimmer and a diver, and this guy said he had pictures of him diving off cliffs in Queensland or something like that, and he was like a 22-year-old guy or something, 24-year-old guy, maybe a little older. And so he invited me over, and he showed me these pictures, then he put on some porn, and he grabbed my dick. And I got up and left, right?
Mm-hmm.
And... what?
I'll hold it. Your hands are cold.
No, I'm fine. And thanks, though. And the only difference between... And it wasn't like I was some hero who was like, back, you unhand me, you
mm-hmm.
you cad. It's just that I happened to get mauled by a baby cub, and this guy got mauled by a full-grown predator, right? This guy got mauled by somebody who was just stone evil.
Right.
So we just happened to run into different-sized lions. There's no big heroism on my part, and no... cowardice or subjugation on his part. It's just that he met a full-fledged predator, and I just met a baby predator.
Right.
And that's the only difference. But when you are starving for attention and somebody pays you attention, you just, with massive floods of relief, you just are overjoyed.
Sure.
And there's no judgment involved in that, and that's the fusion thing.
Right.
So I'm sort of put forward a metaphor that I used in the podcast, the Lost podcast, which was, if I don't want to take care of a dog, right, it's not cruelty for me to not feed a dog if I don't have a dog.
Right.
Right? So if I don't want to pay attention to someone, then if I don't want to pay attention to a pet, if I don't want to feed it and I don't want to walk it to take care of it, then
just don't have one.
Don't have a pet, right? It's
right.
Not that complicated.
Right.
But if I choose to have a pet, if I choose to buy a dog, then there are some pretty significant moral have-tos that descend upon me. And I can abrogate those have-tos at any time, right? If I buy a dog and I just like, oh my God, this walking, this delousing, this feeding, you know, the same thing that you had after we got married, all of that sort of thing, it's just too much work, right? And then what I do is I give the dog to someone else, right?
Absolutely.
I don't keep the dog and then not feed it. Suddenly I turn into somebody who's sadistic and cruel and vicious and violent and so on.
Right.
And I said, with regards to this guy's dream, a couple of days ago before I knew all this stuff, or any of this stuff, I said that a parent who ignores a child, if I'm just walking past a stream and don't turn my head to look at the stream, it's no biggie, right? So what, right? If I'm walking past a stream and there's a child drowning in the stream and I don't turn my head to look or do anything, clearly that's rage.
Yes.
Right, now I'm suddenly complicit in the death of someone by doing exactly the same thing that I did when there was no child drowning in the stream.
Yes.
So the fact that this guy's parents had children imposes upon them moral obligations. There are positive obligations in the same way that there are when you buy a goldfish. You should feed it and not starve it to death in a cruel manner. You've taken on a voluntary obligation, like when you sign a contract. In fact, it's much more significant than when you sign a contract. So I think what this guy isn't seeing is that his parents chose to have children. I don't know if he has any brothers or sisters, but let's say his parents chose to have him and then ignored him and then refused to talk to him. There is a deer.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Oh, how lovely. Oh, there are two.
Oh,
they're beautiful.
They're little.
I guess they're foals. I thought there was a dog for a sec, but then I didn't see an owner.
I saw the white tail, and I thought it was somebody kicking their legs up.
Oh, how beautiful.
Oh.
Sorry, we had to hunt some deer, which was some seriously cool stuff. We just saw like six deer. So we were just talking about how parents, when they have a children, they have a moral responsibility. And if I have a dog, let's say, and I think that I have a little poodle, right? And it's a little white poodle. And I think, gee, my little white poodle is going to love to play with this bull mastiff German shepherd hell dog or something, some Cerberus beast. And what happens is I throw my poodle into a room, a locked room, with this other dog, and never try and figure out whether or not my poodle is getting injured or not, whatever, maybe sustaining internal injuries that don't leave a bloody trail or whatever. But that is my moral responsibility. And when you are a child, it is your parents' moral responsibility to keep you safe. And this 15-year-old, who probably had the mental age emotionally of somebody much younger, though of course he's a blindingly smart fellow, but he feels responsibility for falling prey to this kind of predator, but it was not his job to keep himself safe.
Right.
It was his parents' job.
Oh, completely, totally, 100%. Completely.
To keep him safe. And what that means is that this was all occurring in his parents' house, right? These nightly assaults, this predatory preying upon this child, was all occurring in their house, to their child, and the moral responsibility accrues to them.
Yes.
To the parents.
Yes, yes.
150,000,000%.
Oh, yes. Yes. And so I'd just like to clarify something. When I said a little earlier, and I don't know, I can't recall exactly what the words I used, but I said something about, what was it about you that made you vulnerable to him. I didn't mean to imply, and please don't think that I meant to imply. If I did imply it, or if you got that, that's not what I meant. I did not mean that you were responsible for this. There was something about your presentation that suggested vulnerability. But the fact is that you were a child, and if you were expressing vulnerability, that had everything to do with your parents and your family and their inability to care for you.
Well, not inability.
Well, lack of desire.
Well, active desire to not care.
Right.
An active if I buy a dog, lock the dog in the basement, and refuse to feed it, I'm not neglecting the dog, I'm killing the dog. I'm voluntarily going out and buying an animal and locking it in a in an environment where it cannot get its own food, and then I am refusing to feed it. That's murder.
Yes.
I'm killing the animal.
Yes.
Nobody made me buy the animal. Nobody makes these parents have children. They have the children. The children can't leave them. The children can't fend for themselves.
Right. There is absolutely no responsibility upon you whatsoever. The responsibility was 150,000,000% your parents.
And, of course, the other parents that were involved a little bit more obliquely, which are the parents of this grim, evil sociopath, right? I mean, so he obviously, this rapist went through, must have gone through just horrendous stuff as a child. Now he's acting it out in a destructive way, and that's his responsibility, particularly since he was 17 or 18 when this began, which is right on the cusp, for me, of true moral responsibility. But he certainly knew that it was wrong, right, this rapist.
Sure he did.
Because he didn't, like, try and mount you in the cafeteria, right? He kept it dark and secret, and he locked the door, and he did it at night.
And he kept saying, oh, but I thought you were awake, and...
I thought you keep giving me mixed signals, and I thought you wanted it,
yeah.
Right? So he knows enough to keep it hidden. He knows enough to do it far out of sight. And the moment that you do it out of sight of the authorities, then you are morally culpable for in the moment you try to hide it, right? Then you're morally culpable, right?
We just live in the most beautiful area.
We do. We're just looking at these beautiful ducks.
Ducks
so,
and deer.
Ducks and deer, and there was a little birdie.
And rabbits and frogs.
And wives.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so as far as I know that he feels... moral culpability. I know that he feels that he was weak. I know he looks upon this experience with incomprehension, just reading between the lines. I don't know these things. I'm guessing these things. But it's important that and it's almost like sticking a finger down your throat and retching up a bad meal, that we eject this guilt and blame from our own systems, that we must make that effort to place the moral responsibility where it squarely lies, and not to accept it ourselves. Because the way that you were raised, your parents chose to have children, or a child at least, chose to ignore and neglect that child. When that child began developing a somewhat age-inappropriate relationship with somebody who was doing a lot of favors for that
and
child.
Someone who was probably, I mean, I don't know what kind of visual clues this other guy was giving off as well. You know, why weren't the parents screening the friendships?
Well, I would say that this is the true horror of the situation is that the parents were completely screening the friendships to make sure that the child was abused. This is abuse by proxy. If any decent moral human being who's around somebody who's a child rapist is going to get a creepy, 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 creepy feeling.
Right.
This is not subtle.
No,
this kind of personality structure gives goosebumps and makes the hair stand up on the back of the neck of any kind of decent person. You've been around these people professionally. I mean, they're ghastly, right?
Oh, yes, they are. That's all.
Oh, I really want to know what that next bit was.
Sorry, can't divulge.
But you get the skin crawls, right? You feel creepy crawlies all over you. And you just want to run a million miles from these kinds of people because they're that openly predatory.
Yes.
You don't mistake a lion for a kitten. And you don't mistake someone like... So the parents, as I say, everybody knows everything. The parents were selecting the friends, right? Any parent who invites this kind of creepy monster over and says, sure, you go up and lock the door and spend time alone with my kid in the same bed. Oh, absolutely. Oh, would you like anything to drink? They're basically serving their kid's ass up to this guy on a plate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's an enormous amount of complicity and an enormous amount of rage, of course, in this, that you raise a child, ignore the child, invite predators in to prey on the child, give them a roof over their head and give them breakfast in the morning and say, oh, I hope you slept well. I hope that you had fun with our child. This is the most satanic kind of evil. I can't express it. And this guy, of course, grew up with it, so it's hard for him to see it. I wish I could open the door and invite Bob into a world where he gets just how unbelievably horrifying it was what his parents did.
Yeah, completely and totally terrifying, horrifying. Just the worst kind of it's beyond neglect, like you said. I mean, they're actually taking him and serving him up on a platter to be abused and to be taken advantage of. This just doesn't happen. This doesn't happen. And I hear this from people all the time. But I didn't know. If I knew, I would have. But, you know, I just think that you have to tread very delicately with those kinds of people who say, I didn't know, because...
Well, you have to, because you're a professional who's trying to, you know, help them, but I don't.
Right. But with persistence, perseverance, a delicate hand, you will absolutely find out that they did know.
Without revealing anything, of course, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
No, I can only go based on my own experience, professional experiences, and I can't sort of extrapolate. It just a delicate hand, persistence, breaking down the defenses, and eventually, but it takes a really, really, I mean, very few people are capable of that.
And of course, it's nothing for the victims to do, right? It's a job for a professional to do, the victimizer. Somebody may be able to help the rapist, but it sure as hell isn't the victim.
I'm not talking about the rapist. I'm talking about the parents.
No, what I mean is, though, I mean, sometimes when the kids hear, oh, my parents knew, they then want to, their mission to be to get their parents to admit the truth, and that's not going to happen from the kids.
That's not going to, the parents will never admit that to a child. That's Hollywood. You know, that's Hollywood. And so it is absolutely not Bob's responsibility to go after his parents on this matter. He's going to meet up with enormous defenses. No, it's going to be very swampy through here.
Have we proven this?
Yeah, take a look.
Well, I see a little bit right there at the beginning, but that's it. Let's try.
All right, we will try.
I mean, I was wrong about the wearing shorts.
Yes, you were.
But statistically, I'm going to be right eventually. We've known each other for 5 years. Statistically, it's going to happen eventually. Oh, look at that. It's like I'm floating. Beautiful night. I love this light. They call this in movie making the magic hour, because things seem to possess an inward light all of their own that radiates out through the air. Now, if you don't mind, I'd sort of one more point about this issue, because it's very hard to denormalize this kind of behavior for people who've grown up with it, right? It just seems like it's like gravity, right? It's like me saying, I can fly. And it's like, no, there's gravity.
Yes, and I hear this not just about this kind of situation, but all kinds of abusive situations. But this is what I know. This is, and all my friends are like this. And, you know, I mean, it just seems like this whole person's entire world consists of this kind of corruption and this kind of abuse and acceptance of abuse and turning a blind eye to it.
Right.
Right. So I would say it's not just the family, but it's pervasive.
Right. So what I'm going to do is pretend to be this guy's father, and I'm going to tell him what I would say if he came to me and said, Dad, I was attacked last night by this guy. Of course, what he would do is he would... Let's just say, for the sake of argument, because it would be slightly different if he came down in the middle of the night and said, this guy just attacked me, right? In which case, I would just hold him where he was and call the cops, like, and get him charged and arrested right away.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say he came to me in the morning and he said, this guy assaulted me last night, and I fought him off. Well, the first thing I would do is make sure he was okay, and I'd say, what happened? Tell me in detail. What did you do? What did you say? How are you feeling? Are you hurt? Physically, is there anything we need to take care of, an immediate standpoint?
Yeah, absolutely. Immediately, your physical health.
Right. Now, right? And then he would say, because I'm sure this threat came along right away, then he would say, well, this guy is now going to spread around at school that he did not attempt to rape me, but I wanted and did have sex with him in a homosexual manner, right? That he would say, this is this guy's threat.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would say then is, I said, okay, well, it's up to you what we do. But this is my strong suggestion, that it comes down to two options, fight or flight. Now, the fight option is that I take a couple of days off from work, we go immediately down to the school, and we go to the principal's office, and we say, this guy, we'll call him Joe, Joe last night attempted
Joe's
to rape...
Joe's a sexual perpetrator.
He's a sexual violator.
Yeah.
Sexual perpetrator. And he attempted to rape my son last night. I need for you to pull him out of school, and we need to get the police involved, because we have, obviously, as a parent, it's not even close to a zero-tolerance policy. It's way beyond that. That we are going to get this guy yanked out of school. We are going to get down to the police. We're going to talk to a lawyer. We're going to get the whole machinery of... God help us, state-based justice, but at least we'd give it a shot to get this thing underway so that this kind of behavior would be immediately
exposed as
pathological,
yes.
Evil, destructive.
Criminal.
Criminal, right. So we would get this guy pulled out of school so that he wouldn't have a chance to go around spreading all these rumors. We would immediately press the charges of attempted rape against him so there would be no doubt as to what actually happened. And of course, we would do this not only for my son, but we would do this for all of the other victims that this guy is now trouncing his way through, right? And that would be the fight option, that we would eliminate him completely from the school situation, and that we would get him immediately into custody as a suspected rapist or as somebody who's charged with rape.
Yeah.
And that would be sort of the fight option. The flight option would be that he would never have to go back to that school again. Let's say that for whatever reason, and I would strongly argue for the fight approach, but...
Well, I think particularly in that situation, I personally think that it is essential that the children know, and I say children even at the age of 15, that the children know that their parents support them and that their parents are going to do the right thing and that their parents are going to take action and that their parents are going to be there.
Right.
You know?
But if for some reason this was not enough and the harassment situation became significant,
mm-hmm.
like if he's now called a faggot by whatever, right? Nothing wrong with gays, but I mean, if you're the victim of a rape, to have it called isn't a bad thing, right? Then we would just move. Or we'd homeschool, or we'd go, whatever. It didn't matter. We'd get him out
of
the environment.
And I don't think it has to be one or the other. It could absolutely be both.
Right, absolutely. So the thing that I think is important for Bob to understand, the victim here, is that this is what I would do in that kind of situation. There would be nothing that would have a higher priority for me in my life than to ensure both the safety of my child, the safety of other children.
Yes.
Because at the age of 15, you're still 9 or 10 years away from full brain maturity, right? I mean, you're still a child, but there's nothing that there would be no higher priority than getting this perpetrator punished and having my child feel safe and secure to denormalize this terrible situation. Now, in the longer run, what I would do is I would say, look, I as a parent have completely failed you in some fundamental and significant manner, insofar as this guy thought he could get away with it.
Yeah, absolutely, because I was going to say that, you know, this is an ideal father. But if there was such a father in Bob's life, this would not have happened.
Right, right. Now, I mean, this is a pretty inconceivable event. If Bob had had the kind of parents that he would have told about this assault, the assault would never have occurred. That's fair to say, right?
Right. I mean, when he was younger and this guy attempted to kiss him in the car and was taking him home from band practice, and he was able, you know, if he'd had the kinds of parents where he could actually go to his mom or his dad and say, you know what, this and this happened.
Do you mind if we walk back off the road?
Off the road? Of course I want to see the deer.
Let's go back and see if we can get more deer.
Okay.
Do you want to walk through here?
Do we know where this takes us?
I think it takes us up to the entrance to the park, like the paved entrance. And that is what a healthy family, that's how a healthy family would react to an attack upon a child. You wouldn't turn a blind eye, you wouldn't ignore it, all the warning signs, you wouldn't be completely alone in the jungle, armed with a little pencil trying to fight off jungle cats, right? Trying to fight off jaguars and cheetahs and lions. I mean, you simply can't win. In that situation, you're separated, you have no, you're hungry for any kind of contact, you have no coaching, you have no mentoring, you have no one who's going to tell you anything that life's about, and anyone who pays you any attention is going to be something that you're going to hunger for, as we talked about with the guy dying of thirst. You just grab it and drink it, you don't think, right, because you've got to live.
Yes.
And for us, the contact is living, for children in particular.
Yes.
So That's what I would do, and that's why a child who is raised with healthy parenting, and look, I mean, there's healthy parenting like the ideal in an ANCAP society, but this is like not even close to healthy parenting, even with the average standard of healthy parenting in the modern world. Would you say that's fair? I think what this guy went through was pretty extreme relative to even bad parenting.
Yeah, how could his parents not know? How could his parents not see the distress? How could his parents not, you know, and the assumption, of course, is that his parents never said a word to him about all of this.
Well, he said that his parents, he thinks that his parents knew something was up, but of course they never said a word because they were complicit in this. They were a key, they were the key accelerating and catalytic ingredient in making this happen. Without them and their appallingly neglectful and destructive parenting, this never would have occurred.
Right.
So how are they going to kick over this this wound which they themselves inflicted?
Well, that's just it. They're not going to be able to, so they...
What do you mean they're not going to be able to?
Well, they're not going to.
Right,
there's
a big difference, right?
Yeah.
If somebody put a gun to their head and said, I'm going to shoot you unless you tell the truth, they tell the truth.
Well, they didn't lie.
No, if you magically knew
the
truth or whatever. But the last thing that I'd like to say is this issue of self-flagellation that occurs when you have been through a dangerous and destructive situation like this. It's hard not to feel that there's kind of a permanent smear associated with you, like a permanent filth or corruption, or as he put it, disgust, and that he's ashamed.
Absolutely. That is not uncommon. In fact, that is extremely common amongst sexual abuse victims. There must be something about me. I brought this upon myself.
Why didn't I say no? Why didn't I go to the cops?
Yeah, why did I comply? This is so common and so treatable.
With candy? From strangers in cars?
No, with some real trauma work. I say trauma work because this was a trauma.
Yeah, and a continual, long-term PTSD situation.
Yeah, and requires some really good therapy to help you overcome these issues because this has scarred your sense of self. This has really, really affected your...
Further scarred. It was scarred to begin with.
Yeah, your value. Your self-value, your self-worth. There's something that you believe that there's something fundamentally wrong with you. And that's not true. That is absolutely not true.
Yeah, I mean, if your parents tape up your arms and legs and dump you in the African jungle and you get bitten by a lion, you don't sit there and saying, gee, you know, there was something about me that lion must have just zeroed in on me and gee. It's like the fact that you were bound and gagged, and of course we are helpless when it comes to issues with our parents. And no child can survive a conscious break in the virtue of his parents. I mean, this is why we make up all these fantasy stories that result in things like the state and God with our parents. And so you had to avoid this topic of saying, if you'd gone down to your parents and said, gee, you know, this guy tried to kiss me, this guy who's given me all these rides is trying to kiss me, what do you think I should do? Your parents would be completely uncomfortable. Frankly, they'd rather this guy drive you around because it's fewer chores for them, or some other nonsensical thing, right?
Oh, you know, we'll just tell him no.
Yeah, just tell him not to. Tell him you're not interested.
Or just make sure there's someone else in the car with you.
Or something like that. Or did you do anything to bring this on?
Right. Oh, how horrible.
Right, but they would do something to make you feel even worse than what happened. Believe it or not, you chose the path of least pain. And I know that that sounds ridiculous with these sorts of rapes and some emotional abuse. You chose the path of least pain relative to discovering the moral truth about your parents while you were still many years away from regaining independence from them.
Because, to question your parents or to bring that, not questioned, but to bring that forth to your parents would have revealed an awful truth to you that you weren't ready for consciously. And that you haven't been ready for, because you said in the post that, you know, there were no real problems with my family.
Right. So what he thinks is that, you know, did he have an uncle who raped him when he was younger? And that's sort of what we're asking about. But that's not the issue, of course, right?
No.
So when you wish to escape from slavery, the important thing is that you identify slavery as a moral evil, that you identify the person who was the slave owner as morally evil, Because if you were a slave and you were beaten for being a slave, and then somebody comes along and says, you're free, you're no longer a slave, stride, my friend, and go into, walk into liberty with both feet. But you say, well, I wasn't beaten because I was a slave, and I wasn't beaten by a slave master who was evil. I was beaten because I was bad.
Mm.
Right? If you say, I was beaten because I was bad, then it doesn't matter if you're freed from slavery, you will still continue to beat yourself.
Right. You will be enslaved forever.
Right. You never get to be free unless you identify slavery and condemn the slave owner.
Mm-hmm.
So if the slave owner whips you with a whip, and you say, well, I'm being whipped, not because this asshole has a power disparity in the weight of the state behind him, and I'm owned like a piece of livestock, and he's evil for beating me, and I am a noble victim for being beaten, and am helpless, and have no moral responsibility for being beaten and the resulting scars, then if you don't say that kind of clarity, if you don't place a moral responsibility where it belongs, then you have no choice but to say, well, I'm being beaten because I'm bad. Yeah, the slavery is not unimportant, but fundamentally,
mm-hmm.
even I'm a slave because I'm bad, right?
Right?
This is some of the self-torture that African Americans put upon themselves. It's like, well, we were slaves. It's like, well, everybody was slaves, and nobody got away from slavery, and those who tried like Spartacus all got killed.
Mm-hmm.
So, to survive, you accepted slavery, and you were not beaten as a slave because you were bad. You were beaten because there was a power disparity and the slave owner was evil and chose to enact sadism rather than compassion.
Yes.
So, if you think that you are abused because you are bad, then when you walk away from your parents, you will simply recreate that abuse in order to continue to justify the theory.
Yes.
And to forgive your parents.
Absolutely. It's a recreation. It's absolutely a recreation. What you don't acknowledge, you recreate.
And so I think that the way that I would approach this, and the way that I have in my past, dealing with my past, is to say, well, you know what? Sucks to be me. Holy shit, was I ever born to a bad-ass family. What a bad, bad piece of luck to be born to such a crappy family, to have been surrounded by assholes and bitches and sociopaths and jerks and
molesters.
What a bad bit of fortune that was. And yes, I did what I could to survive an absolutely horrendous environment, and I could not have done any better. I could not have done any better, right? So what would have happened if you'd have said no to this guy? Well, he might have killed you. Somebody who's a rapist is entirely capable of murder morally. He might have injured you. You might be short an eye. You might have any number of things that you might have. He might have spread the most vicious rumors around school, which would have completely destroyed years of your life in even the more wretched kind of solitude, which may have driven you to suicide, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is entirely the case, I believe, that you took the path of least pain, and I think that you should have one big bagload of enormous sympathy for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
That the path of least pain led through this set of dark and wolf-infested woods.
I know, I think you've captured it beautifully.
So, if you want to free yourself from the slavery of history, you have to place the moral blame where it belongs, on your parents and on this sociopath who abused you, that you did the best you could with the circumstances that you had, and that you are not going to continue to whip yourself now that you are free of the slave owners, because if you do, then the freedom means almost nothing. It means less than nothing. So to dedicate yourself to rediscovering the glory within you, the virtue and the beauty and the power within you that is within all of us who survive these trials, to accept no moral responsibility whatsoever for being preyed upon as a helpless, defenseless child, to accept no guilt, to accept no shame, to accept nothing negative, and to wear it as a badge of honor that you have survived such trials, and to not let the slightest speck of a sunspot dim the glory of your soul, is absolutely essential. That's how we triumph over history. Not by guiltily holding a secret out that we were as abused. It is holding as a secret that we were abused. It is not a medal that you crow about, but it is something that you can hold as a great glory that you have survived to become the human being that you are.
Amen.
And that's all she wrote. Thank you so much for posting, and we will talk to you soon. Keep us posted, of course.